You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. On the radio, on your speakers, on your website, app, however it is you consume us here. Thankfully, though, we all agreed, and I appreciate you guys for helping me out with this. No video today, right? We're not going video today?
Actually, currently, there's two of you on the screen.
Yeah,
we're doubling up.
Now, that's just how much I ate over Thanksgiving. I mean, like, seriously, we need to... I thought we were just going to do no video until I could shed some of the Thanksgiving weight, but now you're going double video. Thanks a lot. I thought I had reached out to you guys on the drive home yesterday. Nice long trip from Ben. Like, Maura, make sure that tomorrow we don't have any video ready because I'm not up for it. I got to go back and do some more of this green smoothie cleanse. I ate like such a pig over the course of the last 6 days.
As you should.
I mean, of course, as I should. Thanksgiving is so gluttonous, man. I just shovel food into my mouth. And once you like get yourself into that zone of like, hey, on Thursday, I'm going to eat as much as I humanly can. Then you start doing it like maybe a day ahead of time. Like, hey, I got to stretch out my stomach a little bit. Like, I got to make sure I'm ready for true. Thursday. So all of a sudden Wednesday is like, yeah, I'll do a breakfast burrito. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll throw an ocean roll on top of that. Sure. Yeah. Bring on some ramen noodles. Like, of course I'll do that for dinner.
There's no start and end time either. That's the best.
No, and we went to Bend. I love Bend. I really do. It's such a great city. There's so much cool stuff there, and the food trucks are what get me. Because you go to these, they have this, and we have a little of it here in Seattle. They do it really well there, where like you go to an area that has seating and maybe a bar, and then they have like five or six food trucks surrounding the enclosed seating space. And so like the kids can get what they want. Heather gets what she wants. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go to the barbecue place. Sure. Yeah, I'll absolutely get brisket and ribs and like, sure, why not? And yeah, it's generally not all that good for me. But yeah, the amount of exercise I got ice skating and going to the trampoline park and jumping up and down with my kids for an hour does not nearly come close to the amount of food and caloric intake I had over the course of my time away. So I hope everybody had a great time. I hope, like me, you are shedding a couple of Thanksgiving pounds. There's nothing quite like it. I had a turkey, last thing on Thanksgiving, then we'll get to it, like the enormous amount of sports news. I had turkey prepared a way I'd never heard of. Now, maybe you guys know about this, and I'm sure as soon as I say it, we're going to get a bunch of texts. 206-421-3776, right? Mac and Jack's text line. Of course, I've been preparing it that way forever. Like, I can't wait. I know you're out there.
It's coming.
You ever had turkey in a, like, it made in a turkey bag? Have you ever heard of that?
You mean, like, in the bag and then in the oven?
It's made in what's called, a turkey bag.
Yeah.
You've heard of that? I never heard of a turkey bag.
I think we've done that every year.
Really?
I just assumed that was the normal way.
Well, I'd never heard of a turkey bag. So we went out to dinner because we do Thanksgiving in the restaurant. Let somebody else handle it, which is great. And generally when you do that in like a buffet setting, the turkey does not turn out great because it's hard to cook turkey for that many people. Slice it, leave it out, and still have it be good. But this was more of a plated dinner deal. And the turkey stole the show, which is rare. I know there's all the anti-turkey people out there, too, who'd rather do prime rib or pork, whatever nonsense you guys are bringing to the table. It's Thanksgiving. Like, suck it up for a day and have turkey. So, I ordered the turkey, and it was honestly, and everything was good, but it was the best thing on the plate, which is rare. It was so moist. It was legitimately, like, really tasty and juicy, et cetera. So I'm asking the waiter, I was like, dude, what do you do? Why is this so good? And he's like, oh, go check with the chef. I have no idea. I'm like, okay. So the guy comes out and he's like, yeah, we put it in a bag. Like a bag. So we
keeps the moisture in.
Yeah, so we did a little research. So apparently the bag is best for keeping in the moisture and for taste. But if it's important for you that your turkey skin get kind of browned and have that like
crispied up,
nice, crisp look to it, not the way for you to do it because it doesn't do any of that. But who cares about that? I want my turkey to taste good, not look good. This isn't an Instagram turkey. I want to eat the damn thing.
And I'm assuming this is the way that just the Reynolds kitchen bag, right?
I don't know. I don't know what the bag is. Maybe. But it was delicious. Honestly, one of the best turkeys I'd ever had. I never thought of making it that way. So you learn something every year. And that was my big learning experience.
Okay, I was confused by what you meant on when you might have needed a pocket knife or something in the email.
I did need a pocket knife, but I'll tell you about that later. Okay. I was able to, as it turns out, while I needed a pocket knife, I was able to make do with a butter knife, and it worked just fine. Okay. So pocket knife avoided.
I also had flashbacks. I also had instincts of you running back into the kitchen like another Dr. Rick, like, have my compliments to the chef.
No, it wasn't that bad. Maybe it was. Who the heck knows? It's Thanksgiving, man. And full dad mode. What can I tell you? I know people are freaking out this morning, and maybe I'm just kind of avoiding it. People are freaking out over what's going on in baseball. Everyone is shopping, right? You kind of got into the store late. It feels like, getting there the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and it seems like the shelves are essentially bare, and all the things that you were planning to get, all of a sudden they're gone. I don't know that that's actually true. Right. I know, obviously, it hurt yesterday to see Marcus Semien go to the Rangers. And yeah, it's a division rival and all that. And it hurts. Like he was probably the one guy that I think fit here in Seattle pretty well that was going to be the big name. Honestly, everyone else that signed, nothing else has really worried me. Just want to be honest.
OK,
I'm not panicked yet. A little worried, but I'm not panicked. I didn't think any of the players that have signed so far were necessarily likely fits for the Mariners, other than Semien. And I've been hearing for the last couple of weeks that was a long shot. So
that Semien was a long shot?
Yeah.
Oh.
I've been just hearing it. And, I've moved off of talking about it a little bit just because of what I've heard and some of these rumors that he was a long shot to come to Seattle. He may have felt like the best fit to Mariners fans, but that doesn't mean he felt that Seattle felt like the best fit to Marcus Semien. And so were they in on it? I'm sure they were. Were they competitive? My understanding is I'm sure they were. But I've heard for the last couple of weeks that just likely wasn't going to be the case. So in my mind, I kind of moved off of Semien a little bit, but that shouldn't take away the sting of it. He was the best fit for the Mariners this offseason. Flat out. Marcus Semien was the best fit to do the most damage in a positive way in their lineup this offseason that was available for just money without having to give up prospects. I think that should be very clear. Corey Seager, not an option. Carlos Correa,
yeah,
not an
sure.
option. Yep. Take those two guys out. The next best player who could have significantly upgraded the Mariners this offseason was Marcus Semien, and he signed with the Rangers, and that stinks. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. There's plenty of other players that will also have a significant impact on your lineup that are still available. Some of them in free agency, some of them through the trade market. The Mariners are still active. They're still in conversations. They're in on a lot of guys. I know that doesn't make anybody feel better today. Well, great, you were in on guys. Actually get them. There's still a lot of guys available.
Yeah, but I'm worried that we're not going to get them until who knows when.
Well, Wednesday's your date. I mean, like you've got an accelerated timeline here where everybody seems like they want to get something done before the lockout goes into effect, and it sounds like that will be on Wednesday. There's not even a hint of a rumor that they might actually sign a CBA or some sort of an extension or anything to try to figure this out. So by all accounts, you got until Wednesday to get whatever you want done. They did get Adam Frazier done in a deal with San Diego. It's an underrated deal. It's a pretty good move. It's not perfect. It's not enough. It doesn't change your whole roster. But that's a guy everybody wanted, or a lot of Mariners fans wanted at the deadline. Turns out Jerry DePoto wanted him as well. And they finally get something done for a guy who, if he steps in tomorrow, if he was on last year's team, his career average is second best on the team, third best on base percentage. So is he the best hitter in baseball? No. Does he help your team? Yeah, he's a good hitter.
He's our appetizer.
He's an appetizer. He's a good building block that doesn't affect your ability to do a whole lot more over the course of this offseason. So I'm not panicked. I promise you I'm not. And I'll go into a lot more depth in this here at 6:30. So if you're with me in 20 minutes, I will get a lot more into some of the players the Mariners could still go after, some of the names that you should be looking for in terms of the free agent market, and then the trade market as well, because one of the advantages of having a great farm system is that you can use it to deal for talent. At the end of the day, just get more talented. What's the goal here? It's not to sign the biggest name free agents. That doesn't mean you don't want to do that. The goal is to make the playoffs and win the World Series. You do that by creating the best roster. However you have to do that. And that is Jerry DePoto's chief job. We'll talk more at 6:30. Up next, Panic in the Streets. We'll talk a little bit more Mariners and also get you caught up on everything you need to know from a crazy sports weekend. It's next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, in-depth Mariner conversation coming up here in 15 minutes. Want to dig into the Huskies a little bit later this hour as well. And don't forget, it's game night, man. We got Seahawks playing primetime football and a chance to, as weird as it sounds, kind of stick themselves back in the middle of things here. So however you're listening to the show, we appreciate it. Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. I always like to mention our folks who subscribe, of course, to the podcast and download it every single day. A little shout out to Scott Lax 10. Who gave a nice review and wanted a shout out. So Scott, you got it. I'm happy to provide them. Appreciate the review. Appreciate the five stars. And let's tell you right now what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners are on the board over the weekend. They dealt a couple of minor leaguers for second baseman Adam Frazier. He'd been an all-star last season in Pittsburgh, dealt to San Diego with the deadline, and is now headed here to Seattle for his final year before free agency. Frazier's got a few qualities the Mariners covet and legitimately need. First off, he can hit. .281 career average. Twice he's hit over .300 for the year. His career average would have been second on the Mariners last year. His .344 on base percentage would have been third. So yeah, he can hit. He can also play multiple positions, something Jerry DePoto has stated is important to their plan. So as a left-handed bat, we may see him platoon at times as well. Most of all, he's a good, solid player who doesn't force them to not do anything they want to accomplish.
You know, and frankly, as we sit here and work our way through the free agent market for the potential for trade, you know, we felt like adding Adam made us a deeper team without stopping us from doing anything else we would have wanted to do, which is that's double the fun.
Yeah, it is. And I like the deal. There's very little to dislike here. You give up a couple of lottery tickets for a guy that was an all-star and can legitimately hit. But all of that said, we saw the biggest potential name in the Mariners rumor list not only sign elsewhere, but do it here in the division. Rangers agree with Marcus Semien. 7-year deal, $25 million per year. Other names off the board this weekend include Mark Canha, Starling Marte. They both go to the Mets. Kevin Gausman to Toronto. Avisail Garcia to Miami. Corey Kluber to Tampa. Sounds like Max Scherzer's likely to go to New York to the Mets. So, yeah, it hurts and it stings each time you see one of these players sign somewhere else. I can tell you the Mariners are busy. I can tell you they're in on multiple targets on their board and they expect much more to come here in the next day or two. But I also understand the lack of trust and the patience right now. They need to get better, and so far they let their RBI leader walk, and they've added a player in Frazier that just doesn't replace that power. So I've heard they may need to acquire much of what they want through the trade market. We'll see. Couple of names to keep watching. Trevor Story and Michael Conforto. I don't know what they're planning in terms of pitching, but I've also kind of expected that to come more via trade, given DePoto's previous comments on long-term deals for high-priced veteran starters. So watch out for that. Watch the A's, because the Mariners could be a match for Matt Chapman and or any of their starting pitchers. So there's a lot to still watch for here in the next couple of days. League expected to lock out on Wednesday, so hopefully these deals get done before then.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Hey, hearty congratulations and go Cougs to everyone who roots for Washington State. 27-point win on Friday sets their Apple Cup record. And for it to come after all the challenges this season, what a testament to their players, their structure, and now permanent head coach, Jake Dickert.
There's a lot of people at Washington State that believe in Jake Dickert and the entire Dickert family. We appreciate you. We need you to lead us. We all believe in you. So on behalf of our president, Kirk Schultz, our Chancellor Elizabeth Chilton, I'd like to formally offer you to be the next head football coach.
Sounds like the players are pretty pumped. What a ride it's been for Dickert, who was in his second year as the D coordinator in Pullman when Nick Rolovich was let go, along with half the staff. Since taking the job, the team's 3-2, bowl eligible, victorious in the Apple Cup for the first time in 9 years, and was on the verge of playing for the Pac-12 title. Unfortunately, Oregon gets the win. I think there's real concern that Wazoo's putting too much stock in five games, and more specifically the one this past weekend. But the reality is, it's a quirky job. He's personable. He's representative of the school, and he's shown the ability to lead. That's why he got this gig. He can lead. As for Washington, plenty of rumors that they'll name their next coach as soon as today, as late as tomorrow. Two names most heavily linked are Iowa State head man Matt Campbell and Fresno State coach Kalen DeBoer. But after USC landed Lincoln Riley, the pressure here is to keep pace, man. If UW really is the third best job west of the Rockies, now's the time to prove it. Neither option has Riley's name recognition, but Campbell at least has juice after his success turning around a longtime losing program in Ames. So if you want to tell people to bow down, this is when you earn that right. There's no position more important than a college coach that includes NFL quarterbacks. So if you want to tell people to bow down, it's not Kalen DeBoer that gets you to do that. It's somebody with the resume of a Matt Campbell, or even more than that.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the assignment is simple. Go 7-0 down the stretch. To do it, you got to start with a win tonight. Seahawks will get that chance in the nation's capital. Won't be easy, though. Injuries mounting, especially as it relates to the running game. Rashad Penny, Travis Homer, both out. Alex Collins has been limited. We're likely to see practice squad running back Josh Johnson elevated. Could also see carries along with Collins, DJ Dallas. So lots of issues along the offensive line also. Damian Lewis is going to miss the game. So will his backup, Jamarco Jones. The real questions here, though, start with the biggest names. What are we going to see from Russell Wilson on national TV? Are we going to see the same inaccurate, tentative player that's come back from the finger injury? Or will another 8 days of healing be enough to get the real Russell back? We need that. What style of ball is this team going to play? Do Pete and Shane Waldron and Russ have it all figured out, and are they on the same page? Can they get the ball to their playmakers? More questions than answers today, but a win will put the Seahawks back within a game of a playoff spot thanks to more mediocrity in the NFC. This week, it was the Vikings losing to San Fran, Saints lost to Buffalo, Eagles fell in New York. That seventh spot has a record right now of 5-6. The Seahawks will get to 4-7 with a win tonight. It's crazy. Kraken get a split in Florida thanks to a nice 4-1 win over the Panthers. A couple goals for Jordan Eberle. They will be in Buffalo this afternoon. It's everything you need to know, and we'll do that quarter past every hour.
And we got a ton of Seahawks to get to, but you mentioned the Wednesday deadline. Is there like a time that everybody should just put on their calendar? Is it noon when we stop paying attention to what's going on?
I don't know. Actually, I'm sorry. I don't know what the time. There is, but I don't know.
Is it 24 hours before that that we need to stop?
I don't know whether it's Tuesday night at midnight heading into Wednesday, or if it's I don't know what the time is.
Because I saw the tweet last night that the next 24 hours should be. I was like, why not the next 72 hours?
Because they want to get deals done in time to have them submitted and approved by the league office ahead of time. And that takes a certain amount of time. So when a deal gets done, there's still X amount of time it takes
for
it to
process. So something's not done by the end of today. There's a good chance.
They kind of want stuff done by the end of today. There may still be opportunities tomorrow, but my guess is by Wednesday it's too late.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, they're trying to get stuff done today. And so today could be crazy, man. You may end up with a new UW coach by the end of the day, and whatever the Mariners end up doing may happen today as well. So, yeah, today's a pretty good day to just kind of stick by the radio, follow Twitter, beware of fakes, right? And
yeah,
just kind of do your thing.
I found something that says if the owners and players can't reach a new deal before 11:59 p.m. on December 1st.
Oh, okay. So you got all day Wednesday. That's good. So maybe there'll still be some stuff that goes down tomorrow, but it sounds like today, for the most part, is the opportunity for this to happen.
All right.
We got so much to do. All right, let's start Mariners. We got some Huskies. I want to talk Seahawks. My gosh, it's like just one of the ultimate potpourri days, but let's start here. It's fair to be worried. It's too early to panic. I'll explain next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
I appreciate the use of better than Ezra's good. I'm not sure most Seattle fans are feeling like it today. It really does feel, and we'll talk more at 7 o'clock about this crossroads moment of like, what the heck's going to happen with every team in town right now? The Mariners have this unbelievable opportunity to go good to great, and right now they've not done anything of significance other than Adam Frazier to make that happen. And by the way, they'd already lost Kyle Seager, so they're already starting at a deficit and have a long way to go to kind of make all that distance up. The Seahawks are just desperately trying to avoid the worst season in over a decade, and by far their worst season in over a decade, and who knows what happens next. The Huskies, you know, one of the most embarrassing seasons they've had, certainly the worst since the 0-12 year. And can they get a coach worthy of being one of the best on the West Coast and the West side of the country? I mean, it just you're in this zone right now where it's like things aren't going real well, right? So how do you get that thing turned around? And on the Mariners front, I think it's fair to be worried. Honestly, it is. I'm a little worried. But I think it's way too early to panic because we have to wait and see what they do. There are plenty of good players that are good fits for the Mariners that would significantly upgrade their team.
Yeah,
so,
but it's frustrating to watch some of those good players go to the new division.
It is all, but you're not going to get them all.
Yeah, I know.
Right? I mean, you're not going to get them all, and B, it's not like NFL free agency where it's like first all the good players sign and then the next player sign and then the players after that. It's not like that. You know, the best players in this free agent class haven't signed yet. Honestly, the two best players in this free agent class are Corey Seager and Carlos Correa.
I think what
I'm not saying they're coming here.
What you said in our opening segment made it seem like you think that it wasn't so much about what they were willing to offer him as much as maybe he didn't want to come here.
I don't know that he wanted to come here. I don't know what they offered.
Is that concerning
him, so it's sort of
for
hard
other
to
free
say.
Agents?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you know, everybody's a unique human being. What's the expression? I heard it on Ted Lasso, I think. All humans are different humans, right? All humans are different humans. All people are different people. I don't know whether Marcus Semien wanting to come here or not wanting to come here is related to anybody else, but I just heard for a while that was unlikely to get done. I don't know whether it's because he didn't want to come here or if they didn't believe in him as much as everybody else seems to, or if they didn't want to offer him the money that somebody else is willing to do. I don't know what the reasoning is. I just kind of heard buzz for the last week or two that, yeah, maybe he wasn't going to happen in Seattle. And so to kind of start thinking about some of the other names, honestly, of all, and I would have signed Marcus Semien. I want to be straight up clear about it. I was bummed yesterday to see that he went to Texas. I'd had a little time to kind of start processing that idea, but I think he was the best fit for the Mariners. I'm bummed that they didn't get him, but he's the only player that has signed elsewhere that I've been like, damn, that one hurts. That one really hurts. I'm going to sit here worried because Mark Canna became a Met. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm not going to sit here and be upset because Cole Calhoun is going to the Rangers. That guy posted like a negative war last year. He's not the same player that he was 5 years ago. Talking about 34-year-old. I mean, like, I'm not going to get upset about those until after the offseason is over and I see what the Mariners have done. Now, I understand Mariners fans are in constant panic mode, and you have every right to be. I understand the team hasn't given you any reason to trust them, but you would hope that what they did last year and starting to build this thing and some of the success that they've had in the rebuild would at least entitle them like 24 hours to figure out whether or not they're going to get some of the guys before everybody has a collective heart attack at once. So no, I'm not bummed out or panicked because of any of the guys that haven't signed other than Semien, who I think would have been a really good fit. So who's left? If you're not going to get Marcus Semien, what are you going to do? Well, there's a couple of guys that I think fit. The best and biggest of them is probably Trevor Story. Is he perfect? No. Am I worried about the fact that he, you know, had played all his home games in Colorado and had more success there than everywhere else? Yeah, of course I am.
What's the arm injury you've mentioned a few times?
He has an elbow injury that has limited some of his ability to throw. He's not the same sort of cannon that he used to have.
So moving him to third doesn't sound as...
I don't know where it's at exactly. Yeah. Maybe it's third. Maybe he ends up moving to second. He's an athlete. He could play some center field. I mean, like, he's an athletic player. But yeah. I guess I don't know exactly how serious the elbow injury is, but I guess there's some concern there. And then you got the Colorado concern. But Trevor Story is still one of the best players in baseball. If you sign Trevor Story, you're telling me as a Mariners fan, you're going to be upset? I can't imagine that would be the case. The other would be Chris Bryant, third baseman, long time with the Cubs, helped them win a World Series, went to the Giants last year. I have always believed that he will end up staying with the Giants. But if he doesn't, do I think the Mariners would be interested? Yeah, because they were interested at the deadline. Right, just like Adam Frazier. They were in on Adam Frazier at the deadline. They weren't able to get it done then. They get it done now. They were interested, and I think actually pretty close to Chris Bryant at the deadline. They weren't able to get it done then. Did they try to get it done in free agency now? Yeah, I would assume they do. So I don't know whether he comes, but I think Chris Bryant is a very real possibility, as is Trevor Story. To the outfield, I think Michael Conforto has always been a realistic possibility for them, and it goes back to when we asked Jerry Dipoto about guys who control the zone. Who was the first and second name he mentioned? Well, Mark Canna went to the Mets, and Michael Conforto, who was with the Mets and is now a free agent. He's got pop. He's local. There's some reasons to go out and think about Michael Conforto, who'd be an interesting fit. He's not a perfect fit because of the position, but they have enough flexibility with the athleticism that they've got to maybe bring him in, have him be a corner outfielder, have him hit the DH a little bit. There's also all the A's players. The A's haven't started dealing yet, and they're going to. So maybe that's Matt Chapman to be your third baseman. That's going to cost you something. Maybe that turns out to be one or more of their starting pitchers. Sean Manaea is certainly a possibility. You like that name? I mean, like, there's some guys out there that could very well fit with the Mariners. What they need to do is combine some good players and some great ones. You got to bring in some good players and some great ones. You don't need to bring in five of the best players in baseball. That whole super team thing, dude, that thing always sketches me out. You're seeing it now with the Rams,
and it's not. That's what I'm saying.
It almost, and in fact, it almost always seems to guarantee the opposite, except in basketball.
Yeah,
in basketball, if you get the best players, you just win.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just very simple.
It's the only
Where's LeBron? Where are his buddies? They all go together.
Well, not right now.
In general, LeBron's what, 50? I mean, like, at some point, that storyline has to change. But it's been true for like 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So basketball will kind of put in its, the NBA is in its own category.
Sure.
But, like, look what the Rams have done. Oh, we're acquiring all the older, better, big-name players in the game. It's going to be, they're 0-3 since then. They're 0-3. Right? I mean, like, that's not always the secret to success in sports. And while certainly having a payroll like the Yankees or the Dodgers do and the Red Sox can be incredibly valuable over time, even that doesn't guarantee you anything, as we've seen. So I'm not saying I don't want the Mariners to go spend money. I do. But it doesn't have to be that they, you know, spend $200 million on Carlos Correa in order for them to have a successful offseason. The goal is what? The goal is to build the best team both for the near-term and long-term future. That's the goal. Get yourself into the playoffs to win a World Series by building the best roster you can both now and into the future. So you need, in order to do that, build off what you've got. You need a combination of some good role players and some great ones, some high-impact stars, and role players that make a difference. Adam Frazier is the one name they've got. I would put him in between. He's not a star. He's not a high-impact, you know, guy you build your team around. But he's maybe more than just a role player based on the fact that his career average, career on-base percentage would have been in the top three of this team last year. He can hit. He really can. There's some question about whether or not PNC Park in Pittsburgh robbed him of a little bit of his power from the left side. Maybe. Maybe, you know, T-Mobile helps because it was built for a left-handed hitter to pull the ball down the line. Maybe he ends up, you know, having a little bit more power here. Jerry DePoto talked a little bit about him yesterday.
I spoke with Adam this morning and, you know, asked him what his comfort level was in moving around the field. And his answer was perfect. It's whatever the team needs me to do. So we will view him as the roster stands today. We're going to view him as our second baseman, but we also believe that there are a lot of opportunities to move him into left field and maximize the handedness matchups that we might be able to achieve.
Yeah, so they've got a lot of options with him, which is great, right? I mean, the Mariners are trying to build a flexible lineup that they can put into the spots they want based on the day, based on the matchup to maximize their success. I support that. I think it's a good idea. I also think you need some dudes you can count on, right? I can like the Adam Frazier deal without thinking it's enough. And I know that's hard for a lot of Mariners fans. If it's not Marcus Semien, that wouldn't be a good deal. Don't get Trevor Semien. But I just combined Trevor Story and Marcus Semien and created one lousy quarterback. It doesn't have to be Marcus Semien in order for them to be good. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
Right? Chris Bryant would be nice. Trevor Story would be nice. Right? Michael Conforto's been a really good player, local kid. There's some value there. You haven't even started really thinking about what the pitching is, and my guess is they're in on some of these A's starters. They're in on some of the Red starters, whether it's Castillo or maybe some of the guys that'll cost a little bit less. There are a lot of really productive, good, and in some cases, big-name, expensive players that will help you. But I get the sense, and maybe I should just get off Twitter because Twitter's such a joke. But I get the sense that people are like, if the Mariners don't spend $200 million for a player, they don't want to be good. And I don't think there's any reality to that. I do think that their payroll needs to increase. I do think that they need to go spend money. I would prefer that they spend money rather than dealing any of the big name prospects that they've got.
Yeah.
I think that they've built something special. But there's also the other side of that, which is not all those guys are going to pan out, and you got to give up something to get something. And if you have an opportunity, one of the advantages to trading rather than signing free agents is that you get guys in the prime of their career rather than generally after they've kind of started that prime. You get them a little earlier. And especially with pitching, I think there's a lot of value there.
It's exactly what you just did with Frazier, right?
It's what you, well, you're only going to get him for a year, but there's a few other guys they've done that with. And Marco Gonzalez is a great example where, yeah, you gave something up. Right. And certainly what you saw last year from
Tyler O'Neill.
Kid was really good last year.
Yeah.
But you got something back. You got a pitcher in his prime years rather than his free agent years. And I think there's value to that, especially in pitching. So, look, maybe we're getting too in depth here. Maybe we're kind of going and starting to bore you in terms of what the Mariners should and shouldn't do. But it's not over yet. Right, on Wednesday or when we come in on Thursday, if all they have to show for the beginning of this offseason is Adam Frazier, let's rip them up and down. Absolutely. We'll go to town, man. If Adam Frazier is all they can muster, yeah, that's a bit of an issue.
Well, it comes back to the same thing we talked about with the Seahawks, and is Seattle the destination we all think it is? And if we're not getting any of these names now, I'm starting to wonder, does it say more about that?
Let's be really clear. Seattle's not a destination to anybody in professional sports. Let's just be clear about that. On a national stage, in any sport.
Unless it was the Seahawks 8 years ago?
They were briefly, because of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and the Legion of Boom, able to become a place that people wanted to go play with those guys. But Seattle as a city is not a professional sports destination. It's not.
Yeah, it's
just not.
Cover the most miles and planes.
It's just not. It is a disadvantage to be in this city.
Yeah, okay.
It is not an advantage like it is if you're in the tech business, where everybody's here and everyone's hubbed together. It is not an advantage. It is something that every single professional sports franchise in this city has to deal with. By the way, the Huskies are dealing with it today as they try to figure out who their next coach is going
to
be.
Before you transition there, I wanted to clarify, because we did have a text about my earlier comment that the deadline is midnight Wednesday for the lockout. Joel Sherman of MLB, he's an MLB Network insider, said there is expected to be a frenzy of moves today.
Yes.
In the words of one executive, today will be bananas because physicals and contract language need to be finalized before that deadline. So even though that is the deadline.
Yeah, today's really the day. We're going to be sitting here and watching. So look, let me be clear on it. And I know that kind of hurts to hear. I don't say it with malice. I love this city. I've moved here twice. Like, I really love it here. Amazon built their empire here. Microsoft built its empire here, right? Boeing came here. Like, all of these companies that have moved here and moved all of the people that work here. This is a wonderful community. It is not a hub for young professional athletes to come to. It's not. It's just not. It is far away for them. It does feel like the edge of the world. Trust me, as somebody who did not grow up here, Seattle sounded like like another planet. And I lived in L.A. It still sounded like it was far away, right? You grow up in the Northeast, you move to L.A., Seattle, what? Not a thing, okay? And it's not just me. That's like a general national feeling. It feels far away. And for the first, like, 7 years I lived here, I felt like I was, like, living on the edge of a cliff. Like, everyone I know is so far. My God. I love it here, man. I really do. But it is something that you do have to overcome. So I don't know if that was what was important to Marcus Semien or not. I'm surprised. I thought he was going to be a Dodger, quite frankly. When it was all said and done, I figured he would end up with the LA Dodgers, the West Coast guy. I figured he would be with the Dodgers. Turns out he's in Texas. I don't know what that means. I don't know yet whether it means the Mariners weren't willing to spend big enough for him. I don't know if it means he wasn't interested in playing in Seattle. But I do think that if the Mariners want to make big plays, they're going to have to overspend.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I'm
hearing.
They're
going to have to.
That's what I'm hearing. If Seattle's not the destination, you have to overspend to get somebody here.
Of course you do. I don't know if you got to do what the Mets are doing right now, spending $40 million a year potentially on Scherzer for 3 years. That seems like, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
Bobby Bonilla is like, yeah, but pay me. Just as long as I still get my check every year.
Is it July?
That's fine.
What's his day?
I forget what his day is, but just as long as Bobby Bonilla still gets his check. I don't know that that's the best plan, but they do need to spend. And they do need to overspend because they're Seattle. And because, quite frankly, I do believe that what Kevin Mather said last year hurts them. I believe it hurts them in the free agent market. I don't think it kills them, but I think it hurts them. And here's why I think it hurts but doesn't kill. Look what the Mets are doing.
Based on what they did.
Steve Cohen is a disaster, right? I mean, he's out there tweeting about agents screwing him when they're not and like all the things that he's done. He's a nut, man.
When you have Griffey to kind of counteract the Mather effect.
You would hope.
Right?
You would hope. But look, at the end of the day, if you've got money, Starling Marte is going to be a Met. Mark Canna is going to be a Met. Those guys are perfectly willing to go sign to the highest bidder, even if he seems like kind of a loose cannon and a jerk. And in this case, Kevin Mather's not even here anymore. So, yeah, I think it hurts. I legitimately do. But I don't think it kills you. And I think more money can absolutely get yourself out of that and making some smart decisions. So we'll see what they do today. Frenzy expected over the course of the day. Keep your eyes peeled. Keep your ears here on 710 ESPN Seattle. All right. UW has a real question ahead of them, and that is, can they get their top choice? That's the question. I know that there are going to be folks trying to figure out who that is. Look, you got two names, essentially. It's Kalen DeBoer and Matt Campbell. That seems to be kind of what you're down to right now.
Where did
UW.
Kalen DeBoer come from?
So he's the
Fresno State pedigree, but like, where did that name come from?
I think it's been there throughout. He's one of the names we've heard, okay. Right? I mean, he's West Coast.
I must
Fresno
have missed
State.
That one.
He's the guy who took Jake Haner and had some success with Jake Haner down there at Fresno after apparently he couldn't play here. So okay, does Kalen DeBoer show that you got your top choice? Probably not. That doesn't say to me this was the guy we targeted as our number one option and we went out and got him. He's never coached at the Power 5 level and had success. I don't think that shows that you went out and flexed your muscles as one of the great programs on the west side of this country. That doesn't do it for me. And I'd be very surprised if it does it for a lot of Husky fans. Especially while USC is bringing in Lincoln Riley, one of the biggest names in the sport, and legitimately flexing muscles that have been quiet for the last half decade to a decade. They went from Clay Helton to Lincoln Riley. Okay, that's legitimate. That's big time. That's USC being USC. If you're Washington and your program right now is kind of a mess coming off of a season that was an epic disaster, and your solution to that is Kalen DeBoer, that sounds like a bit of an issue to me.
Sounds like a discount Chris Peterson.
Well,
He's wish.com Chris Peterson.
Look, Chris Peterson is sort of an anomaly. He wasn't a Power 5 guy, but he had had so much success at Boise State for so long.
Like 15 years
and beaten so many Power 5 teams during that stretch, including bowl games, including big national moments. And he had been, so many teams had attempted to lure him away without success that when you were finally able to do so, it felt big, right? Other teams looked around and were like, man, that I wish we had been able to do that. If you hire Kalen DeBoer, do you think that fan bases, however small they may be, at Cal, at Oregon State, at wherever, look at that like, oh, man. Gosh.
They got our guy.
It's so typical. Like, they always get the best coaches, and we're stuck picking through. Like, no. Kalen DeBoer may be the best coach in football. He's a young up-and-comer. Guess what? He hasn't proven squat. And the whole part of the advantage of being one of the best programs in the country, I hear it all the time, is that you shouldn't have to get somebody who hasn't proven anything. You should get somebody who's Kalen DeBoer in 5 to 10 years. You should get Kalen DeBoer once he's already gone somewhere and succeeded in the big time because you're UW. Bow down. Hear it all the time. It's in the damn song. Bow down. I hear it. Well, if you want me to bow down or anybody else, go prove it. Go get yourself a coach that has some experience winning in a Power 5 conference and having success that makes the other schools around you be jealous. Don't just sit here and tell, oh, yeah, we got Kalen DeBoer. Okay, who the heck is that?
You mentioned it all the time about which one's going to impress the kid, which one's going to bring high schoolers here.
Well, and maybe Kalen DeBoer is a dynamic recruiter. I am not going to pretend to be some expert in who the coaches are at the non-Power 5 schools in this country. I don't pay attention to that for a reason. Like, I don't want to know.
You said non-Power 5 with such disdain.
Yeah, it is. It's disgusting to me. No, I mean, it's fine, but I don't watch it. It's not for me. Like, I don't...
Fresno's been a good football school, right?
Who cares? They beat other schools that don't matter. Like, great. You beat directional universities. That's cool. Like, you know, that's fine.
Derek Carr was a Fresno guy, right?
Sure. How'd that work out?
All right, there.
Yeah, I don't mean to disparage him. He's probably a very good coach. I understand the up and coming idea. But Matt Campbell has proven it at the Power 5 level. He's taken an Iowa State team that is for years been a national joke and turned them into a powerhouse during his time there, competing in a legitimate conference against some of the best competition in the country. He's gotten it done, and I think that's relevant and important. I don't know if he can recruit on the West Coast. I think there's obviously some red flags there. But if USC is getting Lincoln Riley and Oregon's winning the Pac-12 North again, and your answer is we got the guy from Fresno, that doesn't work for me, man. That's not bowing down. That's not the Huskies flexing their muscle. That's not top 10, top 25 kind of job material. That's what you do when you're Cal. That's when you do when you're Oregon State. That's what you do when you're Colorado. Kalen DeBoer goes to Colorado, and you're supposed to take who Colorado had who had success. That's the way it's supposed to work in college football. And because of it, you end up with the better recruits and you build a ring around your city and your state and you get the best kids to stay here instead of bailing left and right. The Huskies are in shambles right now. The Huskies are in shambles right now. And Kalen DeBoer doesn't sound like the way to fix it. So hopefully it's Matt Campbell. Most of the rumors I've heard suggest that there's a decent chance they can get Matt Campbell. I hope that's true. And don't tell me Don James came from Kent State. It was like 100 years ago. The landscape in college football couldn't be more different. It couldn't be more different. That's like telling me where Babe Ruth came from.
You knew that one was coming, though.
I mean, who cares?
They were riding trains back then, man.
I mean, like, what year was that? What year did Don James come here? You think the recruiting and coaching college football is the same as it was then? The advantage to being Washington, to the power and the prestige of this school,
1975,
is that you don't need to follow a blueprint from 1975. We're at a crossroads, man. We really are. We're going to prove it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN, Seattle.